Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
All right, welcome back to the Jimmy Talks podcast. As always, like, subscribe, comment, and actually share to your mates and tag me in it or tag someone in it, because it helps with our reach and it helps with getting better guests on. And if you're coming to the Con Expo 2026, I have a discount code to help you out with your ticket prices. It's Starbuck30. This code will give you 30% off. It's valid until December 5th, so use it to help out with the ticket prices, and I hope to see you there. All right, welcome back to another episode, everyone. Today we are here with Josh Beard, Beard Engineering Group. Take it away, who you are, what you do, and what makes you sit in the chair talking about construction.
As you said, yeah, Josh Beard, Managing Director of Beard Engineering Group. Company's probably about 2.5 years old. First 2 years was very much on a part-time basis, so went full-time about, 4 to 5 months ago.
Killer.
Engineer by trade, been in the industry for probably 7 to 8 years now. And what we do as a company, we offer project management and engineering services to the big tier ones and or small civil construction operators in Victoria. We also assist with estimating and tender services and do a bit of commercial stuff in the background, assisting guys work through commercial negotiations, some of their contracts, and overall delivery of projects they may need assistance with. So like I said, been full-time only for 3 to 4 months now, so it's been a bit of a learning experience.
Hell yeah, and you reached out to me and said, let's talk on a podcast.
Yeah.
what made you do that?
Well, I guess, you go off and, start your own business. It's what different to being, an employee. You need to start your own personal branding. You need to put yourself out there, show people, tell people what you do. As much as it is being able to deliver the scope, well, you're also going to try and market yourself as best as possible. So,
hell yeah.
I mean...
Oh yeah, listen, you're talking my language as I'm sitting here after 20 years on doing a podcast.
Yeah.
One is for a little bit of, what's the word, altruistic or whatever it is. One is like I want to put out things. I know I struggled a lot when I was starting. Do you use MYOB or Xero? What is MYOB or Xero to begin with? All of those sorts of questions that you might have, and I've spoken about finance, I've spoken about machines, employees, HR, compliance, health and safety, all of that stuff. No one teaches you. There's no business school that really teaches you that sort of stuff. The degree that they teach you is different than running your own company. So I started it for that, but then also marketing and branding is incredibly important. And I think that at some point, if you mention construction in Australia, then if you get too far into it without someone, or some amount of people knowing Starbuck, they will. We've got a big reach. And hopefully at the end of it, once I'm finished with all of this rubbish, which isn't rubbish too, but it is rubbish.
You become a media celebrity and then you retire.
Well, I can go on Dancing with the Stars then. I can, take on Jamie Drury.
Actually, sounds all right.
Did you see Jamie Drury? He put up a house for sale. I don't know if anyone's seen the for sale.
I haven't.
$30 million he's asking for a house.
Just for
Didn't he run a landscaper with his shirt off?
Mm.
Jamie, you've done a brilliant job. Like, I'm pretty sure he was in, like, what's the thing?
That backyard,
the Chippendales.
On that backyard show on Sunday afternoon where you used to watch and they, you know, renovate someone's backyard. And
yeah, Backyard Blitz.
Yeah, that's it. That's
it. It was definitely on a Tuesday. It wasn't on a Sunday. Come on, that was Don Burke, you know, Burke's backyard.
That's
he
one.
Definitely didn't own a $30 million, I reckon. But yeah, so okay, so then you get into this space and, you know, tell us a little bit about the journey of what you did. So you started off at uni, obviously, and then
You know, Victorian born and bred, grew up in the Essendon area. Was pretty lucky enough. I got to go to a pretty good school. You know, parents did pretty well. Dad was a sparky, run his own business as well.
Shout out to Dad.
Yep. Go Dad. Thanks, Dad. Yep. Garner Electrical, you know, do a good job out there.
If you just need any electrical.
Yeah, that's it. I was pretty good at all the sort of physics, sort of sciencey sort of subjects at school. You know, decided I wasn't going to go down Dad's path and become a sparky, maybe regretfully, but was, you know, decided maybe I'll try and do my own thing. So engineering seemed like the path, you know, civil engineering in particular, you know, seemed pretty exciting, building big bridges and doing some pretty cool stuff.
That's what they all think, eh?
Yeah.
One of my best mates growing up and still a good friend of mine today, his name's Dan. He's a civil engineer as well.
Yeah.
And I remember he came to me probably 10 years ago. So he did uni, I started digging holes. He came out, went to work for his dad. And they never did bridges. And he's like, Jimmy, I'm going to build a bridge.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, oh, my God, I'm going to build a bridge. And now he builds bridges everywhere. Because that's like, that's the orgasm for every engineer, isn't it? Getting into bridge building.
It seems to be. But then the first job I was on was a landfill cell.
That's pretty far away from bridges.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And I guess you sort of at the start, you don't get to go on the fancy bridge at the start. You sort of have to go to where you get told
into
and where
the
opportunity
tip.
Is. That's right. But to this date, probably the best job I've ever worked on, funny enough.
Yeah? That's because you were with Earth Movers, mate. That's what it's about.
Well, that's right. That's right. But yeah, like story, I guess, went to uni, you know, spent 5 years at uni, took a year off and did a year of travel, actually went and worked in Colombia for 6 weeks as an engineer, seeing what they do over there.
How were their bridges?
Not too many bridges, and I'd probably say their way of going about things is a lot different to the way we go about things. I could tell you one story where we went out, they were doing a big concrete pour, and I'm like, oh yeah, sweet, you know, where's all the agis, and you know, got the concrete pump coming in. Nah, mate, there's the sand, there's the aggregate, there's the cement mixers. We just mix it with 100 guys and, you know, do this slab over a period of 3 days, day and night, just guys on the ground mixing concrete.
Unbelievable.
Not a truck in sight.
I actually have a little bit of a funny story about that. A guy who I started working for really early on as an excavator operator because I had fuck all work on.
Yeah.
I had no work, so of course I go operate for someone else.
Yeah.
He used to travel the world for... It was either United Nations or AusAid or something that were helping developing countries build tips. You know, because one of the big things that you need is, you know, the sanitation or whatever, to remove the rubbish from the streets.
Yep.
So then he went over to a place and he was building this tip and they had to put about 10,000 tonne of scoria or aggregate on the ground of the tip for the leachate.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
They drain down, go into a central pickup location and then get pumped out to the ponds. And they were talking about how they were going to bring it in, you know, and they were talking about conveyor belts and they're talking about dozers and they're talking about this. And then he said that there was some guy in the corner of the room that after everyone had came up with their great fucking ideas said, you are all idiots. Just leave that part to me. When do you need a ton by? And they're like, oh, next week. He goes, I'll have it done in 3 days. No problem.
Yep.
So my mate, he rolls into work the next morning and he said that there was a line about a kilometre long of people standing there. And then they were they had this huge pile of 10,000 tonne of of aggregate.
Yep.
It turns out they walked it down there like a line of ants with woks on their heads, putting it down the bottom, and he said it was the most efficient thing that he's ever seen.
Yep,
he goes, because you 10,000 ton to get it all laid out this thick across the whole bottom with all of the pipe work in it and everything else like that would have been a mission.
Yep.
I'm sure you've done it. You work in landfills.
Yeah.
Imagine having 10,000 people walk down there for the price of, you know, I think it was 1,000 people. But he goes, you know, they just got it done 2 days, 3 days, done, finished.
Yeah. Just labour.
Labour, mate.
But I don't know. I think when I was that age, I didn't really have much appreciation about how things were done. It just looked very strange. Like they were going out doing the piles for a school they were building. You know, they were digging deep foundations into the ground, you know, pretty busy area. It had rock everywhere. I'm like, what do you do with the rock? Oh, we, you know, put dynamite in, we blow it up. I'm like, what about the school here? What about the people walking past? Nah, it's just how we do it. Or what about the pile? Oh, yeah, we, you know, we get a couple of guys, we get a winch in a bucket. We go down deep 6 metres, guys in a winch down the bottom, pulling up the dirt.
Seems safe.
Very safe. These days, you know, obviously in Australia, we've got CFA piling rigs, we've got machinery, we've got everything we need to get the job done safely, efficiently. It's just different worlds. Mm. But obviously the labour over there is a lot cheaper, and that's just how they operate. That's how they deliver the scope.
100%. So then you move on, you come back here, and then where do you go?
I obviously probably come out of uni at probably the best time. It was 6-7 years ago and Victoria was starting to boom. A lot of the guys that I actually come out, I went and worked with John Olin for 6 months out at Mernda Rail Link. The, you know, money was getting pumped into infrastructure. Every single probably engineer above me had come from the mines or even overseas because it was just no work. There was no infrastructure in Melbourne. Things were tough, but things were starting to change. So people were coming back. And probably nothing I could really appreciate at the time was how busy it was and how easy it was to actually get a job and, you know, get the experience you needed.
I've got to just like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And I also
Years ago I felt that. And my company was just at a size that, like, you know, still small enough that they could ring me and say, Jimmy, I want 10 trucks.
Yeah.
You know, but large enough to get them 30 trucks if they needed.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden...
Boom. Boom.
Yeah, hell yeah. I don't know what's happening now, though, but, yeah, we'll keep on going.
I mean, we're going into a bit of a lull now, and I think it was a different problem. You couldn't get good enough or good enough people to deliver these jobs. There was so much work going on, and you're getting underqualified people to deliver, you know,
well, scope. I think that's part of the reason why they ended up doing this self-performance model, these big tier ones, that they ended up saying, well, hang on a second. The companies, let's say like Starbucks or like whoever it is, they don't have the lump sum capability.
Yep.
And even if they do have the lump sum capability, we got so many jobs on across the board that, sure, we can facilitate a few lump sum, but really overall we just need guys who can come here and deliver some level of efficiency and help us provide the labour force. And so it ended up being, you got 10 trucks, 30 trucks, 100 trucks, you got Diggers Jimmy, you got blokes, you got this, what are we doing? And they just created, like, I haven't heard much about this model being used elsewhere in the world where it's just this, like, a rate game across the board.
Yeah.
You know?
Are you talking about the reimbursable model contracts?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind getting into that a bit later because I think one of the good things the current government has brought in is that model in particular. And the reason why I say that, and maybe, you know, people from before my time could honour this, but... Before, back in the day, before they had, you know, these lump sum contracts and all risk for the builder, you'd have jobs where it was 8 lawyers, 4 commercial guys, and then 2 engineers actually delivering the job, you know.
Yep.
It was more back end, you know, trying to risk adverse than actually trying to deliver scope efficiently, productively, and as quickly as possible. What this reimbursable contract model that the government brought in allowed everyone to do was, okay, you know, we've still got budgets, we've still got timelines, we've still got, you know, certain KRAs or KPIs we need to achieve, but the risk goes back on the government. And, you know, it allowed jobs to progress and be delivered in a very quick manner than what it would
I think it definitely allowed them to from inception to progress. You
Correct.
Think about just the level crossings, you know, Correct. 75... or whatever they ended up being, 80, I think they've ended up doing.
Yep.
Or
I think we're at like 94 now, actually.
Yeah. So I can't keep up with the age.
Yeah.
You know, telling me every time they release a new something.
Yep. But
the level crossings, they ended up, you know, you could never have done the, you know, the scope of what you needed just to create that and to create the lump sum package price, you know, the for 50 infrastructure projects, each over 50 million and some up to a billion.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, never could have happened.
Correct.
In the time frame that it did, in the decade or whatever it was. So I completely agree. Oh, I think that it did bring some problems of its own, you know. Just from my end, you know, like you have some maximum inefficiencies, especially about the risk. If there's a risk that comes and a latent condition that comes, those latent conditions are, like, you know, expensive.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it allowed jobs to come online quicker. What I think it did create was, you know, it took less thought about budgets and money, and it allowed, I guess, these big contracts to think holistically about a project. So, for example, you have a KRA pool associated to delivering a job. What does that mean? Well, you've got a budget. If you hit that budget, then you get bonuses. If you hit your program, if you hit your safety requirements, your quality requirements, your key community stakeholder requirements, you don't have too many NCRs. You have your social and community outcomes, you hit your sustainability targets. You get money for every single KRA target that you hit. What does that mean? It means instead of just thinking about the budget, you're thinking about everything. How can we deliver the job within program, within budget, safely? Still thinking about the community, you know, without pissing them off too much. Still, I guess, coming into, you know, adding social procurement and thinking about sustainability targets that we need. It's a holistic way to try and deliver a project. And
how did you think it went overall?
The companies that I've worked for on that model, it went really, really well. But then there's some larger organisations where the budgets have blown massively.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
And I think it's due to internal processes with the big companies and as well as probably red tape associated to, I guess, the way the government's delivering these jobs.
I heard something a while ago and they said it's not red tape, it's beige tape.
Yep.
Just every single step of the way, it is another hoop that you have to jump through that the policy or procedure or the mechanism to utilise that might not be, you know, adequately explained or whatever it is. I know we put through an application for something and then they told me that I didn't have the proper portal or proper profile on the portal, even though I have, my company has the profile, but I personally do not have a profile. And because historically my company has done that, but now I'm doing something, now all of a sudden it's got to go back and change and get that. I think that beige tape, that bureaucracy that comes from these sorts of things, because it just swells. You know, it might not be the six lawyers and three commercial guys might end up being 10 engineers, but those 10 engineers are doing a whole shitload of reporting for those, what did you call them, KRAs or KPIs. They're doing so much reporting so that money is shown to be well spent.
Yeah.
And so it's a bit of a balancing act, you know.
Yeah, and we haven't got it right yet. And the way I described it, like being an engineer, sometimes when you go on these jobs, it's like having the accelerator on and the brake on at the same time.
Clever.
You're trying so hard to push and deliver the jobs, you know, with efficiency and, you know, do the right thing. But then there's these processes in the background, or beige tape, as you call it, that just keeps stopping you.
Yeah, but so just slow you down. I've had a guy, like, I went to go take about 1,000 tonne of crushed rock into a job once. Got a order and it came out of nowhere, 1,000 tonne of crushed rock.
Yep.
Quick. Got all the trucks loaded, went there and they said, oh, where's your MSDS for the crushed rock?
Yeah.
And you go, dude, it's crushed rock. Like, like, what do you want? Yeah. You go, yeah, but we're worried about silicon. And you go, I understand that. Like, let's have a look at that. And so we just had a delay of about, I don't know, let's say 2 hours. Well, we just got the stuff together and just saw what we needed to do. And I actually think that that's not a bad thing. The problem was, is if that was done beforehand, you could have given it, you know, and that's that beige tape. It doesn't necessarily stop you from doing the Mernda level, the Mernda railway extension.
Yeah.
Does slow it down a shitload, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, like, I think the other problem is there's so many different government stakeholders that, you know, all fight for their own wants and needs that they delay themselves in one way, shape or form.
And without even meaning to delay, I don't think. I genuinely, in my heart of hearts, do not think that anyone sits down and like, oh, I'm going to stop
this. Yeah, no, true. No,
but they are thinking to themselves, whoa, hold up, we haven't got our proper paperwork or we haven't gotten the sign off or the dig permit hasn't been done yet, so we'll have to just pause. But it's okay because the government's issuing the dig permit and they're part of the – they're a stakeholder.
Yeah.
So we have 150 guys that stand around waiting for a permit to come through for a week. Oh, you know, which is a bit of an issue.
Yeah, well, it's a massive issue. And there's no probably direct answer to try and fix it. Like some of the things I've thought of is, you know, you've got these government entities that come in and have certain controls over these projects because the government's got the money. They're the ones paying for it. So they have, in a way, the ultimate say of what can and can't be done. Maybe the government needs to go, you know, one step forward and go, all right, we have all these people in place to try and make sure things are done properly, safely, money's getting spent wisely. To me, they need to implement some sort of, let's call it a efficiency or productivity tiger team of some degree, and their sole job is to push production on projects. If there's certain, you know, high-level things that are delaying the job in, you know, some way, shape or form that's costing sometimes millions of dollars, is there something they can implement into these reimbursement model contracts that people have a lot of power and ability to, I guess, prevent these delays?
If you had the right people involved in that part, I think it would be brilliant. If you have the wrong people involved, I think that could be really shit.
Yep.
Very, very interesting. But we need to finish off the BEG story. So you go out, you work for John Holland, you build a tip.
No, I actually went and worked for Fulton Hogan. So I worked for John Holland while I was at uni. Went and worked for Fulton Hogan for 3.5 years. Built a tip out in Clorinda. Probably wasn't the nicest, prettiest job, but it was actually quite an exciting job. Like big moxies and big 50-ton diggers.
See, everyone loves earth.
You know, we needed to import 200,000 cubic meters of dirt for all our capping. GCL.
Where's Starbucks with the dirt?
Yeah. You know? I think we actually got a bit of dirt from you guys back in the day.
Now we're talking.
From memory.
Yeah, no, we hauled in a lot into Clorinda and stuff like that. So, yeah, we definitely bring some dirt in.
But, yeah, pretty much was able to, you know, witness a what was a tip site with trash everywhere into a big, nice landscape parked area that the community could use and was generating, you know, methane gas, which was generating to electricity.
I was just about to say, apart from the methane gas towers everywhere, it was all beautiful. Yeah, they're not really that tall though, are they? They're just they're just these little fire hydrants sort of shit now.
They're not too bad. I mean, they're pretty non-noticeable compared to what's actually underneath. But there is a lot of work in the back end to get those, you know, old tip sites into a capped landfill that sits there for the next 50 years. But actually, funny enough, they sold the land for $1 once we finished to a developer. The developers, he had a 50-year strategy. I don't know how many people have 50-year development strategies, but the developer had a 50-year strategy. He goes, I buy the land for $1. I've got a golf course around the corner that's got no landfill on it. In 50 years' time, I'll develop a new golf course on this tip site. And then what will that allow me to do is get a development approval on the golf site that I currently own close by, and I'll make millions. I thought that was quite interesting.
I can't think about what I'm doing next week and this guy's building golf courses in 50 years. Like, sometimes you feel like you're a killer businessman.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'm like, got it, killed it.
I was like, you'll be dead.
And then other times you hear about a guy making a 50-year plan for golf courses and housing developments and you go, oh, I'm so shit. Like, why can't I just be better? Like, I need to plan for next year. Oh, yeah, but anyway, hats off to our golf course development.
Then I actually went and worked out at Melbourne Airport for 2.5 years.
Lovely.
That was also a pretty good place to work and went through an interesting period of COVID. So COVID hit, and funny enough, as soon as COVID hit, I think the airport were like, oh, this is going to be like a 3 month, you know, little hiccup.
Mm.
We've now got, you know, no planes flying. We've got all these tines, all these runways and all these major taxiways that we, you know, normally can only get 24-hour shutdowns for. Go nuts. And they decided to spend big, and instead of doing all these, you know, expedited pavements, go full depth pavements, and you get runway closures for 2 weeks to tie into, you know, the runway instead of having these, you know, 1 day closures. But then after about probably 6 or 7 months of COVID, they realised, oh shit, this thing's not stopping. You know, we could be hit with this delay for the next 2 years, 3 years, who knows? Not much revenue coming in. Things were looking slow. So I was still at the airport, but I just, to me, wasn't really growing, developing. Things looked a bit grim at the time. Was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to go work for a pretty good company out of Vic. At the time, I think they were only 12 months of being called Simmel, but formerly Civilex. Worked for them for 3.5 years, and they went through a lot of growth.
If you were in the first 12 months there, you know, sort of in the changeover period from Civilex and Conset and the other companies, Grampians, into Unite and a few of those bits and pieces, if you were there, then you would have seen some things happen.
Oh, they went through quite significant growth period even before and during my time. And I think any sort of business owner, you know, especially working in the business, would love to try and get some sort of back-end story of how they actually, you know, went through it and developed and how they grew so quickly. I'm sure people have got their theories and thoughts. I mean, I've got my own sort of internal thoughts, but...
Oh, well, if anyone's listening, there's a podcast story coming up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, people would tune into that one.
Probably. Like while I was there, like you know, I think culture is a really big thing in business, you know. Like I've walked in here this morning into the office, everyone's happy, chirpy, talking, everyone's buying each other coffees, you know, seems like a good place to work at Starbucks. Similar had a very similar sort of thing, you know, that the people there worked hard, there's no doubt about that. And if you didn't want to work hard, maybe you didn't fit in. But at the same time, you got awarded for recognition. You did the social events, you know, they did fun things. They allowed that positive culture.
It's really interesting, though, that from my perspective, and I've seen some peaks and troughs.
Mm. Yep.
You know, what is it? Ebbs and flows.
Yep.
When you're looking up, when things are cooking, right, you'd be surprised how excited everyone is because they're in the journey, they're wearing the name, they're like they are part of what's happening.
Yep.
Like this
community.
Community.
Yeah.
You know, right. They're coming in like we're working hard. And when we're busy, when Starbucks is busy, like the office is a buzz. Like people are super happy, you know, jobs are flying in, trucks are going out, we're moving shitloads of material. When she's a bit quiet, she's a little bit more difficult. Yeah. Like you can put on as many community or like a, you know, social engagements, or you can do this as much as you want. But if guys are sitting around twiddling their thumbs and going, oh, fuck, like we did the job to start.
Yeah.
That's part of the real challenge is to keep that, like, keep it off of the floor.
Mm.
You know, I got a good friend of mine that's a Herb that says keep some altitude in it. So if you're flying up here and you drop a little bit, it's okay. But if you're flying down here and you drop, you're going to crash there. And so when the times are good, you know, and maybe that's what, you know, we do or, you know, good companies do. I hope to think I'm a good company.
Yep. But,
you know, you keep the altitude up so when we're busy, you're still doing things that make people really happy to be at work, you know, and it's not just taking it for advantage of it and giving out a pay rise, you know, when you're busy. So you have some altitude so that when things drop a little bit, you just, you know, everyone's still there.
Yeah.
And so then you were in Simmel.
Was there. As I sort of said before, always had a bit of a passion or want to sort of do my own thing. So I was always, you know, thinking of things on the side, you know, what can I do to branch out? Not too sure. Sort of got really interested in drones. So probably, you know.
You look a bit geeky at heart. Do
yeah.
You play like World of Warcraft and stuff? Or
not quite that geeky.
Okay.
Not quite that geeky, but they were doing some drone stuff on site, you know, doing a lot of aerial imagery for, you know, end of month planning, progress claims, you know, helping plan jobs with aerial data and things like that. volume reporting, whatnot. I thought, this is kind of cool, you know. Drones are probably, I don't know, they're the future. Everyone's using them. They're getting used overseas. Let's get into it. So went out, got my drone license, and started doing some side jobs, I guess, you know, small little marketing jobs for small construction companies, you know, companies that needed it for aerial mapping, for taking data, whether it was for environmental data reasons or just general progress on site. A lot of clients wanting to do it to assess against progress claims against their subbies to make sure, you know, they weren't taking the piss or whatnot.
Roofs, I've heard a lot of people doing a roof inspection with it because, like, it's sometimes hard to climb up and go all over, especially if you're a 150-kilo project manager.
Yep.
Or, you know, you might not want to get up on the ladder because they've taken away the SCAF or the EWP, ain't there? And so they use a drone, bring them in, give them a retainer, and say, you've got to do 5 or 6 or 7 roof inspections a month, and that way we can sign it all off, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah, well, funny you say that. We actually recently won a contract with a company that works with a lot of insurance companies. So part of that contract is we go out, we take, you know, a mapping plan of the roof, assess the damage. They then go do the repairs. They then book us in later on to come back and assess to make sure has it been, you know, repaired and done adequately and get signed off. You know, you don't have to get on the roof. You don't need safe working. You know, there's other risks involved with flying drones, no doubt, but definitely a lot safer, you know, way of going and getting on a roof. So, yeah, got into that. I'd say that's probably, you know, the niche part of the business at the moment. When I left CIMIL, I worked for a small civil contractor out of Melbourne. The idea of that being, I thought that there might be an opportunity there to then, you know, buy into that company. And that would be my way of starting my own business and doing my own thing and having skin in the game. You know, work for those guys for 12 months. Didn't quite work out the way I thought. You know, had a kid, spent a couple of weeks away, thought about it, and was like, I don't think this is working out. And just said to myself, the next phone call I get of any opportunity to go off on my own, I'm taking. I don't know if that sort of manifested my own future, but I got a call 1 week later from a guy I used to work with, who gave me an opportunity to basically get my own contract, start off on my own as an engineering consultant, and then took that by the balls. And effectively, I'd say that's how Beard Engineering Group went from a little part-time thing on the weekends to full-time.
Perfect.
4 months in.
And?
Good. Challenging in a way, you know. A lot of things to learn, hence why I would have been listening to your podcast, trying to figure out, what do you need to know about? Like, what's a business activity statement? What's, you know, what do you
pain
need
in
to...
the ass.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Thing from the government to take your money.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
What do I need to know from reporting for, you know, if I bring on people, you know, do I need to get...
Make sure that the government can't take your money. That's what ends up usually going around in a circle, you know, like...
Things no one teaches you.
Well, pretty much. Yeah, like a business activity statement. Like you would have had to sit down and figure that out. You can build a bridge, a tip site, this or that, but then, you know, have you ever had to do anything for that? No, you wouldn't have. And so in which case, you know, don't get me wrong, I used to be of the opinion, I still am sometimes, but, you know, there's a person that's not as intelligent as me that's killing this at this moment.
Mm.
you know. And so, like, that went from when I was on a job site taking on a bit of extra scope. You know, there's a guy out there at the moment who, you know, like, is doing this job and he doesn't have anywhere near the training that I've got. Yep. And I'm second-guessing myself and he's like, yeah, sure, that's 50 grand, you know. And so it just keeps motivating you to keep jumping into it, reading about it, looking at it, you know. And we've got all of these brilliant, you know, sort of things that we can look at and learn from, and there's all of this information out there on the internet and books and this and that that you actually can find. And now hopefully there's a little podcast that says, you know, business activity statement, got to do them. Do your tax, do your paperwork. It's the most important thing. I've gotten, I said it a long time ago, the three most important rules. This one actually goes out to one of my operators who,
yep.
Because he brings it up all the time. The three most important rules in business. Used to think that it was, you know, do a good job. Used to think it was, you know, be smart and whatever, or do your paperwork or all of this stuff. And it's not the case. The three most important rules in business are get the money, get the money, get the money.
Yep.
Because I've done shitty paperwork and gotten paid. I've done the best paperwork and not been getting paid.
Yep.
You know, I've done the best job and some asshole has decided to chop me. And I've done a pretty terrible job and they were super happy and paid me every cent.
Mm.
You know, money is the life, the blood that gives a business life. Oh, that would have been
cash
really
is king.
Good. That would have been really good if I slayed that. Like, if, you know, money is life. Shit. Nah, money is the blood that gives you life. You know, you have to have it. Nothing else matters when you ain't got money in the bank account. You know, it doesn't matter how good your maintenance program is if you don't have money to pay for it. Doesn't matter your employees and how good they are, how loyal they are, how well you've treated them. If you don't pay them this Wednesday and you don't pay them next Wednesday, they're not going to need to be paid the Wednesday after.
Yeah.
You know, like, money is the foundation. Everything else is built upon that. Yeah.
And is there, like, do you think there's a fine line? Like, you know, like you said, you do a good job, you put your invoice in on time. 30-day payment terms, still don't get paid,
yeah.
For example. Where's the line in terms of where do you start actually getting commercial without pissing them off? But there is no line because, well, technically it's 30-day payments. I've done a job. I've done a good job. So just pay me. That's it, you know.
You can train your customers a bit, you know. You can. We got up to, in COVID, we had $10 million outstanding.
Yeah.
Because everyone decided in COVID, every business owner went, oh, fuck, I might be. We weren't the airport, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where they're like, oh, we've got time to do some tie-ins.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, I'm going to be broke. I'm going to have no business. So I'm not going to pay my bills.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got up to sort of $10 million. And then I realized that, you know, because you still got your overhead to pay for and everything else like that. I think that at the beginning of it, communication is key. That's
it. Yeah.
You just need to be communicated with, and then if people are going to pay you on 45 days, if people aren't as liquid as they might make out to be and need a little bit of help floating a job or whatever else like that, it's just a conversation.
Yep.
Now, some people take advantage of that. They do. And then the conversation has to turn a little bit more commercial, to which I'm in the lucky position that I always turn around if a builder isn't paying. I say, that is absolutely fine. You don't have to pay me. I'd like some profit of the job.
Yep.
Because if I'm in it for the sours, I've got to be in it for the sweets. So just tie me in. Give me an apartment. And they go, what do you mean give you an apartment? Yeah, just give me one. I don't even want a top one.
Yeah.
Don't give me a one-bedroom studio. And they go, why would I give you an apartment? You go, well, if you're going to hold my money at the very beginning of the project, the entire way through, you're saving a shitload of interest.
Yeah.
So my whatever it is might turn into whatever that is. And then they go, oh, no, just pay this bloke because it's going to end up paying. He takes an apartment and takes our money. Like, you know.
It's not a bad way to – not a bad fallback.
Well, you got to have the float to be able to do it as well.
Yeah.
Mind you – I don't own apartments all over the city, so it ends up not working. But it does bring, like, the question to mind. Like, you know, we're a flexible company. We like to work in with people. I've held lots of money for people on certain jobs. But it does – we have this thing that, you know, especially I think in Australia, because I do speak to a lot of people around the world, that these – companies, the 30 days and stuff like that, it's almost a negotiable. Like it is, like it's 30 days does not mean 30 days. And if people think that an excuse is, well, I haven't gotten paid, so I'm not going to pay you. It don't work like that, firstly.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
And if you want me to be attached to your payments, that would therefore mean I'm attached to your profits.
Yep.
If you want me to take your losses, which you're making me take right now, you haven't been paid, that's a loss. So I'm not getting paid, it's another loss. If I'm part of that arrangement, why not I'm part of the profit arrangement? Because at the end of it, you're going to just pay me what you think you owe me. And then at the end of it, you're going to keep all of the upside, but I've gotten the downside of the cash flow hit and I've gotten the downside of the risk of not getting paid or whatever else. And it just doesn't seem very equitable
at
times. But it is part of the industry. It's part of the fabric of the industry, and I don't think it's going to change as much as people want it to. And so you've either got to suck it up and deal with it or go back on wages is what it usually ends up being. Have you dealt with much? You've been going 4 months. Have you already dealt with a few people late payments?
No, I haven't personally, luckily, but I have worked with companies that have. And it's always a very, fine line. And a lot of time you're dealing with, oh, hey, we've got this massive job coming up, $6 million, job coming up, that we're in the final negotiation piece, just give us another 30 days and
you can't pay for the job I just did. Why the fuck do I care about a job you're doing in the future?
Different bank account, different job, different government.
Why don't you just pay me for the job that I've already done, you piece?
But they all do it.
And that's part of the issue. And I say if I have a dollar for every job that was promised to me, I'd have more jobs than I've actually done. I've been promised everything. Everything I've been promised from people to get out of paying.
Yeah.
It's just a tough game. Yeah. It is just a really tough game. And there was a guy I know that didn't get paid because one docket, which was worth about $1,000, they had a disagreement of about one fifth of that. So let's say $200. The total invoice amount was $400,000.
Yeah. Wrong.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wrong. You're strong arming me for $200.
Yeah.
And like, you know that any business is going to say, no, don't even do it. Don't pay me the $200. But that's not right either. But, there has to be a fair way to do it. And in which case, what I try and do is I say, right, if I owe you $400,000, I'll transfer you $375. Even if it is $1,000, I'll take your hurt out of the situation because then we're playing on a fair playing field, which is, there is, while we're doing some DD on your invoice, we're really getting stuck into it because if there's one $200 that's wrong.
What else is wrong?
What else is wrong? But really, it's not going to be any more than everyone knows if you're talking about it in a pragmatic way. But people use it to strong arm you all the time. Yeah, and so he actually held up that invoice for 3 weeks, not paying, for $200.
Yeah. Or at least pay out what you have approved, and if you're not agreed on one docket, then okay, we won't pay that docket.
Yeah, how many people do you know do that? They don't. They want the entire thing, and then they, if you put in two invoices, let's say you have one invoice that's all day dockets and stuff like that, and then you have one lump sum invoice, I like to try and do both because they're through different processes, this one has a QS that's looking at it, and this one's got
retention, one doesn't have retention.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know that multiple times, I don't know how many, five times I've put it in and waited for my payment 30 days at the end of the month and they say, you're only meant to put in one invoice, now we don't pay you because you didn't put in one invoice and unfortunately the payment claim day is the 25th, you didn't contact us till the 1st because you didn't get your payment, which you should have known better because you should have asked for your payment certificate and read the contract, which says line item 4, page 7, subsection 3, one invoice per month only, and you go, you've got to be kidding. And it's almost like, and you would have been part of this, sometimes on the other side than what I was.
Engineers are probably half the problem.
Where I am doing my best, yeah? Like, and I genuinely am. Like, I'm, you know, they come to me and they say, Jimmy, we need 5,000 cubic metres in this gate every day, otherwise we lose. And so we are cranking dirt.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've got trucks coming from everywhere in Melbourne to bring you whatever you need.
Yep.
And then I do my best with everything on the way through, every section of the way. So the delivery of the project, the paperwork behind the project, the invoicing time, we keep the, in with that. And then it seems like sometimes on the flip side of that, the people you're working for aren't doing their best, you know, for us, the supplier. They might be doing the best for their client, but, you know, it's like they look at it and they go, sorry.
Gets put at the bottom.
Put at the bottom.
Not my issue almost.
I had a $1 million invoice that got pushed back because we sent an email. We forgot to put the S in the email name and it never bounced back.
Shit.
$1 million. We were waiting like this.
Yeah, right? What's going on? No, I haven't heard
this
anything.
This was like six, 7 years ago as well. So $1 million to me, I was like starting to get eye twitchy. And then the 30th came and we didn't get the money. First came, you don't want to annoy him too much. You're like, oh, nah, fuck it. We'll ring. Hey, mate, you know, where's my $1 million? And they go, oh, we never got an invoice.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
And you go, okay. So then you look through it and you go, oh, my God, the accounts girl screwed it up and didn't put the S in it. Oh, fuck, we don't have a procedure for this.
Yeah.
Then you go back to the builder and you go, builder, could you please give me the money? And they go, you haven't put in an invoice. And you go, you claim for it. I know you claim for it. Like, your process isn't built upon my invoice. Mm. You know, like, $1 million to me, I'm going to be, like, eating, you know, a bread and water at home for dinner. You know, I'm not even going to be able to afford baked beans. Can you flick me something because I'm in a world of pain? And they go, yeah, nah. They didn't give me anything either, by the way, for forgetting the S in their name and it never went through. And then so we have a follow-up procedure now that we do for any big invoice. We have a set dollar amount that if it goes over that, we call them to make sure that, you know, we got it and if it's all right, and then we follow up, you know, because even the SOPA Act, people half of the time people aren't issuing the payment certificates within the 7 days, to which means that the payment is actually due and payable or whatever it is.
Mm.
And then they still send through, you know, variations to it or, you know, on day 28 and everyone takes it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And as you said, it's the back end. That's the lifeblood, you know. If you don't have that back end sorted, then you can't sort anything else out.
And if the back end doesn't put S's in emails, then you're in deep shit too.
Pretty much fucked.
Yeah. Far out. I can still remember that. It was like 11 o'clock at night and I was still raging in my old office, which was a portable.
Yeah.
A portable building that I bought, that me and a mate had actually
bought. In your backyard?
No, it was on a block that we took as grass and
holding paid new machines, pretty much.
Yeah, and we were absolutely, I was balls to the wall and I did a $1 million job and then forgot to put an S in the email and that cost me, yeah, like the stress for that. Yeah. And if I wasn't liquid, like if I didn't have money back then, I was probably only turning over $1 million a month.
Yeah,
and that was my biggest month ever.
Yeah.
At $1.5 million, let's say. And then I don't get paid at the end of next month and you sit there and you're going,
don't sleep for 30 days pretty much.
No. And milk is off, you know. Like you can't have any milk in your coffee. It's just black coffee only. It's all you can afford. International roast, Nescafe. Yep. So what else did you want to talk about? Because we're probably starting to get to the end-ish of this sort of thing. So we had a few things you wanted to touch on.
There's a couple of things we're working on in the background. So part of Beat Engineering, we've developed a web portal called EngineerLink. And what it's designed to do, it's sort of to assist me as well, but we've put it out there to try and find, you know, the best of the best engineering-wise in Vic or throughout Australia that are interested to go out to do consulting, you know, contractor work as engineers. Sometimes hard to get into the industry in that sort of fashion, you know.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Branch out and do your own thing. I think the beauty of, you know, contracting, yeah, there's a bit more money involved potentially in the front end, but you know, you are your own person and you're accountable for your own doings. You can't hide away when you work for yourself. So we've developed for two reasons. If there's anyone out there that want to get into more of the contracting space, you know, get in touch with us. You know, we can get you up on the platform and you market yourself out there. And then the second part of the development of that is it allows, I guess, your big tier ones or even your small civil subbies that might need some engineering assistance. Maybe they, you know, can't have the forecast cash flow to bring on full timers. Well, there's a portal that you can filter through of potential available engineers. You can look at their experience, you can look at what they do, and you can engage them and bring them on and, you know, work for you for however long you need, 12 months, 2 months, 1 week, little side projects, whatever it is. So we're just trying to bridge that gap to try and, you know, I guess assist us as well, and, you know, assist these, you know, anyone out there wanting help, you know, to get the help they need in a quick fashion and not having to go down the recruitment path, I guess.
Is that a gap that you saw when you were changing over and starting to build your own thing?
Yeah, well, it was more the gap I see is trying to find good people. You put a post up on LinkedIn, hey, trying to find an engineer, here's the role, here's the opportunity, and you get a lot of crap. You get a few good eggs, but probably hundreds of applications that you go, I've no idea if you're even a real person.
It's a real challenge. So there's some government policies, incentives, and blah 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 for certain areas of communities to apply for jobs and stuff like that. And you know, like I put up for an excavator operator and get ex-beauticians that you know apply for the role, and or you know. Not saying the beauticians can't, of course, operate excavators, but what I am saying is that, you know, applying for jobs to keep your unemployment check, you know, makes for every business that we have had to take on more overhead. Like I had one job that we put up that, you know, entry-level position, 500 applicants in 3 days or 4 days. 500.
How do you figure out who's good?
And how much admin time does it take and the parameters around that? And I know that there's some great services out there that actually filter through that shit for you. But how many more services do I need? You know, like there's services like being offered from everywhere because obviously when, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, builders used to build. Like they actually built the building.
Yep.
You know, they had carpenters, tilers, plasterers, painters, you know, underneath their in-house. Our builders build nothing. None.
Yeah, it's our way outsourced.
Every single thing. Yep. And that's because of some market pressures. I get it. But also, like, that filters across into a business that says, like, you know, we now outsource all sorts of shit. And that means that you have subscriptions, which I put up a lot of posts about because I think that this whole subscription service thing is just, like, it's built for the people who are selling the product, not built for, you know, what you're actually getting. You know, there's one specifically that, you know, when they came, they were just so early on and I was able to get to them and they were one of the ones that exploded. Worldwide. I was one of the first to sign up. They came in and they promised me the world. We will modify it for you. We will customize it. We will have people integrating, training. We will put together, you know, a fucking camp. We'll give you a camp where we all can go. They didn't actually offer the camp, but you get what I'm trying to say. Yeah. You know what they did after I signed up? Nothing. Not a thing. Their live chat didn't work. There was no one on the phone. No one would come. And then all of a sudden, the price increases start coming like this because as soon as we've spent the money integrating our staff onto it, it's real hard to get out.
You're stuck.
And so how do you like do it. And that's across the board, though. You've got your takeoff service. You've got your like your allocation software, your safety software, your, you know, you've got a ProCore subscription, you've got an Estimate One subscription, you've got a Hammertech subscription, you've got a...
It's a lot.
And then you've got all of these fucking subscriptions and you're not even utilising them at all, and then you see someone still on a spreadsheet on a computer and you're like, stop it, I've got a program for that.
And I think the other problem is even like all these, you know, bigger jobs, there's subscriptions just to get on the job. There's certain portals you need to have all your compliances up to date on.
Yep.
And then it's additional overheads, additional full-time staff required just to keep your compliances up to date. It's it's a
Dijkstra, 3D safety, those sorts of things. You know, all of it is it's a challenge, you know, or like with the, you know, select plant hire with for the machines for Lano Rourke and stuff like that, which I think is great also because it does mean that they can really take ownership over their, what's under their umbrella. You know, but for us as a company, we like I was just able to pull three out like that's only the delivery side, let alone all of the other things you need in the background.
All the accounting softwares, whatever, HR softwares for all your people.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. So you've given your plug to your, it's what's it called again?
Engineer Link.
Engineer Link.
Part of Beard Engineering Group.
Yeah,
self-developed, I guess, back-end web portal. Yeah, still growing it, still I guess, in its juvenile stages in a sense. But, yeah, if there's anyone out there that wants is interested and wants to get in touch.
I can think of a lot worse things for people to do than to jump on something in its juvenile stages, you know, like it's it's important, and it means that they're probably going to get a lot of value out of it because, you know, if you your first 100 people are going to get a whole lot more value of your time than the, you know, the 1,000th person. But, you know, not saying that there's not value for the 1,000th either. And so we touched on that. And what else did we have to rock and roll on?
I think we've touched on most of it, like – My biggest concern or thought to try and progress the industry, and as we call it, your beige tape, you know, a little bit different to the building sector, which I think you might have a bit more understanding of. I've, you know, grown up all in infrastructure and mostly government spending jobs, and it sort of, it kills you to see sometimes you're on these jobs and, you know, you're delivering these good projects and, you know, you get to the end, but it's like, we could have done that so much better. You know, we could have saved money here. You know, why are we waiting 6 months for a permit or some lease agreement to get onto this area where it's literally just, you know, two people could have done a handshake agreement and got the thing moving.
100%.
There's just,
like even worse, it's a government park, but we, you know, they haven't given us the agreement and it's owned by the government and eventually they're going to agree because the bridge goes there or the pedestrian, you know, access goes there. It's planned to be there. It's just we don't have the agreement.
100%. And like maybe instead of one Westgate tunnel, you could have had two. Like the government's still going to spend the money. Let's be honest. The current government at the moment, they're still going to spend the money. If they can find efficiencies to deliver infrastructure in a more feasible fashion, well, we're just going to get more infrastructure developed in Victoria.
So let's talk a bit more of a specific example then. Yeah, like Australia needs some ridiculous amount of new homes built per year. Like 1 million over 5 years or something. I think we've built about four. Maybe five.
It's so expensive to build a house.
I've spoken to two people in very recent times that both have housing subdivisions that they've done, small private housing subdivisions. One of them had a property that he had about 20 blocks of land for sale. He sold them all pre-sale like this.
Yep.
Couldn't get the permit through because of a few bits and pieces that he had to get past, CHMP, a few other bits and pieces. The sunset clause hit. He had to return the deposits of that. Got the permit, has put it back on the market now, and has not sold one in almost a year. Now, if that – and that's the same story as someone else has done. He's up to stage three of his own subdivision, about 20 to 40 lots per sub. First one sold out in like 3 minutes, one of those ones where people camp out. Second one sold out in the week, and the third one's been on the market for a year. No sales.
Is it interest rates? People can't afford like housing anymore, just too hard?
Fuck, I don't know, eh? I don't know. Well, you know.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what it is, but I think there's a couple of factors there. Like me personally, I've never done a development, but you know, like my old man's got a few builder mates that they've done a lot of developments in their days from young age, and they're like, I've done this my whole life. You know, I've developed property. I can't make money doing it anymore.
I think, you know? I was just about to say, you can't make money. Now, that might be interest rates, that might be building costs, that might be taxes, it might be...
All of the above,
mm. Having a little bit. But if, you know, everyone screams about developers not making money, but I know for a fact some developments are going ahead at the moment just to get them off of the books, and they're taking a little bit of a loss because the holding costs are huge.
Mm.
But there's no money in it in Victoria at the minute. You know, there's no money, even if you have some, like, take Airbnb, that people were making money with Airbnb, government comes to take 7.5% or 10% of it now with the levy. You know, you got land tax to try and push you into developing them, you know, don't know why I can't talk on Monday, but all of these things, you stack them all together and it ends up being that the guy to pull the trigger on a development is not making money and so he will not do it.
Yeah, why would he? Why would he take all the risk?
What?
And all the stress and everything to come with it?
And so how is Australia going to build 1.2 million homes in 5 years when we've built five?
They won't.
Well, then what happens? Where do all the people go to live?
It's a good question.
I don't know. Is there someone smart on this podcast that can tell us how to fix the housing shortage crisis while we still keep hammering small business with more and more? Because let's be honest, it's mostly small and medium-sized businesses that are building most of these homes, you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, 3-4 months in, you learn about payroll tax, work cover.
Payroll tax is really interesting, eh? Because it doesn't make any sense why you should be financially de-incentivized to employ people with another tax. And it's not a small amount of tax, eh? Like, you end up paying a shitload, you know? And by the time you pay that on top of other taxes and stuff like that, that's one that just should be gone. It makes no sense. And it's like you talk about an efficiency sort of bull terrier or tiger or running around, whatever it is. You know, someone should say, oh, geez, like, I know that you got your hand in the cookie jar for the government, because that's what it's got to be, yeah?
Yeah.
It's got to be the government got its hand in the business cookie jar saying, hey, look, as soon as you pay over $750,000 in tax, whatever it is, we're going to take 4% or whatever.
4.25%, yeah.
Yeah, so see, I talk round figures, but I know I'm switched on. So what do you do? What do you do there? And is the government really going to do that? Because they're already behind in budgets and they're already behind in everything else. How are they meant to give that back? And if I said they've given a reduction of deposit to first home buyers, which I believe is the stupidest thing that you could ever fucking do, why would you make the banks make more money? You know,
and you got to work for it. Like, unfortunately, I'd probably say owning a house isn't a entitlement or a right. You do have to work and sacrifice, and you do have to, you know, have a bit of a crack out there, and maybe don't go on the overseas trips, or maybe don't buy the handbags and stuff.
And
like
don't
that.
Buy the avocado on toast.
Exactly. And maybe you do have to, if you know, it's not for everyone, but if you do have the opportunity to stay home with your folks for a little bit longer, like I said, not always the opportunity for all people. So that's fair, but stay home a bit longer.
But some people get the leg up too, yeah, and they, you know, maybe drive to work an hour and a half in the morning instead of 30 minutes because you're living somewhere far out, you know, which it costs a little bit less, or whatever it might be. But it's definitely a huge problem what's coming, and I genuinely don't know how to fix it. But my opinion is, and I'm glad you actually got there, until the developers are making money, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
in any sort of meaningful way, you know, you drive around. What's the crane number that they count? You know, for how strong an economy is.
I'm not too sure what it is, but it's a way to figure out how good the economy is going.
Yeah, Melbourne's going backwards. Like we're in a fucking, it's diving down like this.
Unless it's a data center.
Unless it's a data center. But I think data centers are worldwide. We've got only a couple of minutes left. I like to try and keep these about an hour, even though it's been a great time. Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, not really. Like, appreciate, you know, letting me on. obviously probably not as a profound business owner, but still trying.
No, it's not about business owners. I want the broad spectrum of things. I want a 70-year-old bloke to come and tell his boss stories. I want a guy who's happy and really full of life, who's just starting out, to come and sit here in front. Now, I think you've been an absolutely brilliant guest with what you're saying. I want employees to come on as well. Actually, I'll do a little bit of a thing just for you, Louis. I have a lot of people reach out to me sometimes and say, I don't know if I'm big enough or I have a big enough following or whatever it is. Some of the people I put on this thing have no following.
Yeah.
What I'm after is I want someone who, if they listen from the first episode to the 50th episode when we get there, to get a real spectrum across the entire industry, from white-collar workers to business owners to blue-collar workers in the trenches, driving machines, 50 years in the game, 5 minutes in the game.
Yep,
you know, whatever it might be, I'm looking for that, so you can get a holistic sort of look at what this industry is. So hit me up if you want to come on, subscribe, comment, because it really helps. And also, as always, share to your friends. It means something when you share the stories. I appreciate you coming on.
Awesome. Smacked the mic.
No, it's all good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Beard Engineering Group.
That's it. If anyone wants to reach out or is interested in, figuring out what we do, from tier ones down to your small subbies, then I'm all ears. I'm interested.
Done.
Get in touch.
Thank you very much. Speak soon.
Gotcha.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.